ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's 1999, and on the other side of the world from Melbourne, Tanya Chamberlain is hard at work at her law firm in Vancouver. She's busy, chipping away at a case, preparing for trial, when a videotape is delivered to her office.
We used to have a library and a TV with a VCR, a video recorder for anybody who didn't have videos when they were young. But yeah, we got a videotape from the police, and the entire office went and watched it.
What have you been up to?
2 a.m.
Got in at 2 a.m. last night, then.
It's a grainy recording of a group of men lounging on couches in a hotel room.
You got a lot of things hanging over here right now. There's no doubt about it. From what I've found out, you're going back to jail.
Tanya knows one of the men on this tape. It's her client, Andy Rose. Tanya's been working on his case for over a year with her colleagues because Andy has been accused of a double murder. On the tape, a man with a mullet wearing a vest interrogates Andy.
Don't need my fucking help, do you?
If I didn't kill him, I ain't gonna say I killed him.
You don't need my help. It's because you're fucking full of shit.
The man in the vest seems to be the head of a crime gang. He pushes and pushes Andy to confess to the murders. He promises Andy that if he does, he can make his problems with the law go away.
If you're gonna sit and lie to me, and you don't want fucking help, then I can't help you.
If I tell you I didn't do it, then you don't believe I didn't do it. What am I supposed to say?
Well, I don't know what you're supposed to say. But the evidence is all there.
Either you're with us or you're against us. If we don't help you, no one will. You can't rely on your lawyers. And if you don't tell him everything now, it's going to get so much worse for you.
Tanya watches as Andy just keeps denying it.
Well, I can't say I did it if I didn't do it. Well, I'm still not going to say I did it because I didn't. I'm not going to change my mind and say, oh, yeah, I did it. I will not say I did it.
Finally, after a lot of beers and hours of pressure, Andy confesses.
We'll go with, I did it, okay?
Whatever, he says. We'll go with, I did it. Andy had maintained his innocence for years. Now, his lawyer had watched him confess to murder.
Stunned, utterly stunned, shocked. Gobsmacked would be a word you'd use. Completely unprepared for that.
The documents delivered to Tanya with the tape explained everything. Of course, there was no crime ring. It was all fake. It was a Mr. Big Sting. The men in the gang were undercover police. And the guy playing Mr. Big was actually one of the inventors of the whole technique. His name was Al Hazlett. And Andy had fallen into his trap. Tanya and the colleague who'd been working with her on the case were floored.
We were angry because both of us really believed that Andy was innocent. And so at first, I sort of think the shock turns to anger.
Undercover police had spent months slowly and deliberately drawing him into their circle.
We're in Vancouver. We're preparing for trial. We're doing other things. And we have no idea that Andy's made this new group of friends or work associates.
They'd enticed Andy to commit petty crimes. They paid him bigger and bigger sums of cash until finally he was summoned to a meeting with the boss, a Mr. Big, who said he could make Andy's problems disappear.
We were all quite shocked at the elaborate nature of the operation, how much the police officers looked the part, played the part well, and we were also shocked at the things that Andy admitted to.
It was a defense lawyer's worst nightmare.
Now the trial had just gotten, 100 times harder.
And on top of all that, she's starting to wonder about something else too. Why would Andy confess to something he didn't do?
Everyone is presumed innocent in my world, but I have to say, you think to yourself, why would an innocent person say these things?
From small beginnings in British Columbia, Mr. Big grew into a juggernaut. The technique has been used at least 350 times to put some of the most notorious North American killers in jail. And it spread to other countries, including New Zealand and Australia. And eventually, it would be used on Glenweaven. But critics of Mr. Big say the technique is risky, because sometimes it can even get a confession from a person who didn't commit the crime. I'm Alicia Bridges, and this is Mr. Big. In this episode, the last episode in this season of Unravel, could Mr. Big lock up an innocent person? To answer that question, we have to start in Canada, where it all began. Long before Andy Rose was caught up in a murder trial, he was working on a farm in the foothills of the Canadian Rockies, near a small industrial town.
Andy was living in Chetwynd, working at a sod farm with a bunch of individuals. And I would describe their life as kind of hardworking, hard living.
The sod farm grew turf, the type you can put in a garden or a park.
His job was extremely menial and low paying. He wasn't a person who was well educated.
He was living in a motel, going out drinking when he had time off work.
One of his neighbors was a woman named Madonna Kelly. They would have known each other quite well, and they would have worked together and probably socialized together.
According to Madonna, Andy showed up one night at her trailer. She said he was drunk, literally howling at a full moon and covered in blood. And she said he made a terrible confession.
Madonna Kelly said that Andy came to her and told her that he had had something to do with the killing of the two German tourists.
The murder of Andrea Sharp and Bernd Goericke was notorious.
So there were two young people, a couple, who were traveling through British Columbia in the early 80s. I believe it was 1983. And they were hitchhiking around BC. And at some point, their bodies were found shot and in a remote campsite outside of Chetwynd, British Columbia. Things like that don't really happen in British Columbia. British Columbia is a very safe place. And yes, I would say it was very unusual and very frightening for people.
The murders went unsolved for 6 years, until police heard that story from Madonna about Andy being covered in blood one night. Also, near the site of the murders, a pair of bloodstained jeans had been found, and it turned out they were exactly Andy's size. So he was charged with murder.
The main witness against him was Ms. Kelly. It was one of those cases that was really totally dependent on her confession. But the jury found him guilty despite a lot of inconsistencies. For example, she said that this alleged statement occurred during a full moon and that he was sort of howling at the moon. And the defense lawyers were always able to establish that there wasn't a full moon that night.
Despite the inconsistencies and despite Andy's denials, he was sentenced to life in prison. And that was just the beginning of an ordeal that would swallow the next decade of Andy's life. He appealed and he got a second trial, but he was convicted again. Then, in 1996, while Andy was still in prison, he met his new lawyer, Tanya Chamberlain.
Do you remember your first impressions of him?
He was very hopeless. He had lost hope. He, I think, was always an extremely vulnerable, fragile person. But it was clear that before he was arrested, he drank to excess at times. So, you know, he was a marginalized person and a person without power. He couldn't afford a lawyer. He was funded entirely on our legal aid system.
But then out of nowhere came something that could change the whole case.
A very, very unusual thing happened. A woman who was living in California contacted the police in California to say that her husband had confessed to a murder in British Columbia. just before his passing. And she eventually gave a statement where she said that her husband, who had been living and working in British Columbia and traveling in the Chetwynd area at that time, had picked up two hitchhikers and he'd killed them. And he allegedly told her this because he was riddled with guilt when he died.
It seemed that another man had confessed to the crime. With this confession in their back pocket as evidence, Tanya and her husband, who's also a lawyer, worked together on the case, and they helped Andy secure yet another trial, his third. While Andy waited to go back to court, he was let out of prison on bail to live in the community. And on his way out, Tanya gave him some advice.
Keep the peace and be of good behavior, and don't talk to anybody about your case. Don't talk to anybody. Typically, advice that most lawyers give is don't talk to anybody about your case except for your lawyer.
Andy didn't listen. 4 months later, undercover police posing as gangsters make contact with him. Of course, it was a Mr. Big Sting. And ultimately, it led to that fateful moment in the hotel room when Andy said he murdered the two backpackers. Reluctantly, he tells Mr. Big, "Whatever, we'll go with I did it, okay?"
"We'll go with I did it, okay?"